Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
You can, you know, have the cojones and the ovaries to frickin' stand up to this Goliath that appears to run you.
This isn't a subject to by the federal government. It's just sort of a statement of fact. We're either going to build the project with the approval of the voters or not build the project. And if we do, then the federal government has said that they've already allocated the first $100 million as their share of the project.
I know what the administration should do, which is to enforce and implement the Affordable Care Act. Was it perfect? No. What they have done time and time again is to sabotage.
I went to Greg and I said, are we going to work together in partnership? And he said, we made a mistake. And I thought that was a pretty major admission from a director. We made a mistake and we're going to fix it.
And joining us to talk about the Corporation Commission leaving APS's rate hike in place, Greg McKay stepping down as director of the Department of Child Safety and more, our former Arizona House Minority Leader Chad Campbell, now Senior Vice President at Strategies 360, and Emily Ryan with Copper State Consulting. Welcome back to you both.
Good morning.
Thank you.
So let's start with something that happened just yesterday. A shoe and apparel brand, Nike, announced that it was, in fact, still coming to Goodyear, despite the fact that it will not be getting some state incentive money. Emily, what do you make of sort of the back and forth on this? And are you surprised that Nike continued on with its West Valley expansion?
No, I'm not really surprised. I think that they got a lot of great incentives from the city of Goodyear. And I think they, you know, stayed the course. And I think the governor, you know, was there to welcome them. I think there's been a lot of nitpicking on, you know, what the governor's Twitter comments were about pulling the $1 million incentive to Nike. You know, I was supportive of that. I think that Nike found a way to not honor a female American hero because losers have hijacked a symbol and are using it for their own gain. And I think Ducey took a stand on that. You know, I was glad he didn't go off the charts, stay out of my state, I'm burning all my Nike shoes. You know, I was glad. I reward the fact that he didn't go over the cliff on that. But they're also not getting $1 million. So he sent a message. I think it was an appropriate level of a message to send.
Chad, is this a kind of have it both ways for the governor? He can blast them in tweets and then welcome them to the state the week later?
I mean, I think it was an attempt to have it both ways, but I think it backfired big time. You know, from a PR perspective, putting aside the policy debate about whether or not Nike needs a handout from the government, which I would argue they probably didn't in the first place, putting all that aside, and I'm glad they're coming. It's good for the West Valley. You know, the PR aspect of this for the governor, though, is a nightmare. You come out, you know, a week ago, you blast them in a series of tweets, Trump style at like 2 a.m. in the morning. It was obvious that he was doing this to rally his base, stoke the flame for the red meat for the base. And then a week later, he comes out with his tweet saying, oh, I'm so happy Nike's coming to Arizona. Welcome to our state. Can't wait. It was a very, very bad PR move for the governor and very unlike him. He's very disciplined usually. And recently there's been some cracks in that discipline. I think this was the biggest one we've seen yet.
Do you think these are cracks though, Emily, or do you think this was a strategy? Do you think he did this on purpose?
You know, I think that this is one of the moves we've seen where the governor has spoken from the heart. You know, I haven't talked to him about it. I think the unfortunate photo shot of him in a pair of Nikes, full disclosure.
Like two days after. I was going to bring that one up.
Full disclosure, I'm wearing a pair of Nikes
right now.
Well.
Yeah.
I think that unwinds any, you know, PR opportunity with it in the future because someone will hit him right back with that photo like they did. Mm. But I think if it was calculated, he wouldn't have been seen in Nike apparel. I think he was speaking from the heart. I think he did not want to reward that type of move with $1 million. And I think a lot of Republicans support that.
Well, and what I would like to see, I mean, this whole controversy started because of a flag on a shoe, right? So I think what the first shoe out of that facility should be is a flip-flop with the Arizona flag on. I think that would be a great first production shoe.
You've been thinking about that for a while, haven't you?
Maybe.
He's excited about this idea.
Emily, let me ask you about the Twitter and Chad talking about sort of cracks in the discipline. Why take that approach? I mean, why does the governor need to rally his base about that kind of issue in that particular way at a 2 a.m. 9-tweet series about this particular issue?
You know, that's just it. I don't think this one was a calculated PR approach. I think it was a guy who was ticked off at the decision Nike made, and I think he was letting loose on it because he could. And I think a lot of people happen to agree with him.
Do you think it was literally keeping him up at night that he was still awake at that hour?
Apparently. I was asleep then. But.
Well, and see, this is where I disagree. I think this was so calculated. It was an attempt to get in the East Coast media, which he did. He timed it correctly for the 5 a.m., 6 a.m. news cycle on the East Coast. That was all a calculation. He made the national news. And then, it backfired on him because 2 days later, he had the picture of him in Nikes. His base skewered him for that. And then if you looked at the Twitter responses yesterday and the national media on this, he's getting skewered by both the right and the left right now.
Okay, so I'm going to go there, though, with the other question on this, which is the question of incentives, right? Which is kind of, this has stoked that debate again. Now we're looking at giblets again. We're looking at how much should the state and cities like Goodyear, other cities, be giving to giant corporations like Nike? What are you both hearing on this debate from each side?
I think, you know, giblets, all those things are always hot topics. You know, how do we pick winners and losers? And the other side of the argument is economic development and drawing people to the state. You know, I think we're far better off when we draw people to the state with low regulation, low cost of business, favorable tax policies, good quality of life versus picking certain companies and throwing a ball of money their way. That's always controversial.
And I think, you know, I think incentives are beneficial when used wisely. I think, especially when you're talking about emerging industries, sectors that have some type of social good or greater community component to them. Again, when you're talking about a company like Nike, though, I do find it fascinating that we're handing out money to one of the biggest companies on the planet. So that's an interesting one to me.
Yeah, and I mean, emerging companies, emerging technology, that's one thing. But if the market's not there to support them, do we want to just cherry pick a technology and prop it up? Electric cars, you know, do we want to just prop that up and foist that on everyone? Let's let the market decide.
Well, it's interesting because losing that million or so dollars from the Commerce Authority doesn't really seem to have stopped Nike from coming here anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not going to notice it when they balance their checkbook. Enough is my guess. So
well, so let's talk about this because the governor basically ordered the Commerce Authority to revoke that incentive, which the Commerce Authority did. Does the governor actually have the authority to do that? I mean, can he tell this kind of quasi public entity to what to do with its money?
That's an ongoing question. I was in the legislature when the Commerce Authority was created under Jan Brewer. Many of the concerns I had with the creation of that entity was the lack of maybe oversight or checks and balances. I agreed back in the day that we needed to do something, the Department of Commerce at that point. I mean, we needed something new. But this is an ongoing debate back then. I think we're seeing it now. What really constitutes the governing authority or the governing body over the Commerce Authority? And really, at the end of the day, it seems to be just the governor and the board that serves on the Commerce Authority. So it's a question that I think needs to be answered still.
Yeah, and I think the board could have pushed back if they disagreed with them.
Yeah.
I don't think they disagreed with them.
Let me ask you also about the position that Goodyear's mayor found herself in with all this. She had to come out very quickly after the governor's tweets and say, look, no, we still want you, Nike. Please come back. Did this put Mayor George Alorda in kind of a tough spot?
I don't think so. I think cities and towns are used to sort of being at odds with Republican governor administration. So to have to say something counter or express a different self-interest than that of the state or that of the Republican governor is not an unusual position.
I was thrilled to see her do this because, in my eyes, city elected officials, traditionally speaking, shouldn't get involved in big social battles. Their job is to deliver city services, to create jobs, to make sure the city has a good quality of life. And I think the mayor was doing exactly what she should have been doing. So I was very happy to see her do that.
All right, guys, let's move on from Nike to another major corporation, that being APS. That is a locally based one, of course, as opposed to Nike. Some big stuff going on this week at the Corporation Commission. And let's start with the commission's decision to leave the rate hike from a couple of years ago in place. Some customers led by Stacey Champion had asked them to review it, that a lot of customers had seen their rates go way up, much more so than what APS had talked about, with the average of 6% or so. Emily, what did you make of the fact that the commission voted pretty overwhelmingly to keep things where they were?
I think that vote on its face is a little bit deceiving. I think it doesn't indicate where their hearts and minds are on this issue. The point was made, and Bob Burns has said on the record that he thinks that APS is over-earning, and he thinks something needs to be done. In fact, he was one of the dissenting votes on that original rate case, but that it is more expedient, it's more efficient, it will be a quicker relief for ratepayers to bring them back in October and force them to do another rate case. And that's, in fact, what they're doing. And that is going to be a quicker process than relitigating an old rate case. And that's why you saw the vote the way it was.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, this rate case situation is complicated. It's been an ongoing battle forever. I think many people don't think that the rate case was decided appropriately the first time. I think that many people think it needs to be rectified, including a lot of the commissioners. It sounded like many of them were concerned about the potential of litigation. I think that the approach that Burns and some others are using is, let's set this next rate case hearing and let's fix it then and move forward. And I think ultimately, you know, we've been dealing now with controversy on the Corp Comp for going on 5, 6, 7 years, right? I think ultimately, as you move into next year, as you move into the election cycle, the Corporation Commission race next year, I think you're going to see people on all sides issue to start talking about, how do we start moving forward? How do we hit the reset button? Let's get ourselves away from the entanglements of the past and just start looking forward and fixing this. And I think you're going to see a lot of different people from a lot of different sides of the political spectrum kind of agreeing on that approach, is my guess.
But here's the thing about the next rate case, right? That it could very well result in another rate hike. that's what you're hearing from a lot of folks who are inside these conversations. Do you think that's possible?
I don't think that's possible. I think Commissioner Olson, Burns, Kennedy, the fat majority on that 5-member commission, I don't see the votes being there for another big rate hike.
I think politically, I would say it would be a very, very steep recovery if they were to vote for another rate hike, is my prediction.
That is Chad Campbell, also joined by Emily Ryan. I'm Mark Brody with Lauren Gilger. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap. More conversation in just a moment. Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Lauren Gilger. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix, joined on this Friday newscap by Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and Chad Campbell with Strategies 360. And we've been talking about the Corporation Commission and APS. Let me ask about what the CorpCom did yesterday, which is extend, I'm not sure if you'd call it a cordial invitation, but an invitation nonetheless, to the head of APS and Pinnacle West, Don Brandt. Emily, any chance that he actually shows up?
I guess there's always a chance, but it's remote. I would not look to see Mr. Brandt walk through those doors anytime soon.
It would be must-see TV, though, right?
There would be standing room only and a line to get in. They could charge, I think.
They sell some tickets, maybe raise some extra money for the state.
Right.
Chad, any chance he actually shows up?
I mean, again, I doubt it. I'm with Emily on this one. I can't see the incentive for him to be there. I don't really know what it would get him at the end of the day. And again, like I said, I think most people on all sides of this issue are trying to figure out how to just move forward into the future at this point. I think that's the goal for a lot of people right now.
But it seems as though, and we heard from Sandra Kennedy yesterday, said he's the guy that we need to hear from. And we heard from Bob Burns saying these were his decisions. We need to hear from the guy making the decisions. We don't need to hear from, you know, lower level staffers.
Yeah, I mean, that may be the case, but I'm just... I wouldn't be holding my breath. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Well, how far do you guys think the commissioners might take this? I mean, could they subpoena him? Could they force him? Like, could they send DPS to his house to drag him in? I mean, how far politically and how far logistically do you think they can take this?
Well, Arpaio's not in office anymore. I don't see him getting pulled out of his bed in the middle of the night. I think it's something they're going to continue to talk about. I just don't look for it to happen. You know, but it will be a talking point when someone else shows up. They're going to have to continually answer for why he's not there. I don't think they're going to let up, but I don't know that they'd go that far.
Yeah, I agree. And again, you know, I when you head in the election season next year, you know, you have three seats up for grabs in the CorpCom next year. I think a lot of things are going to change once campaigning starts. Hmm. And I think that's going to set the tone for how these conversations take place. It's going to shift drastically, though, is my guess.
Okay, but I'll play devil's advocate here. We're laughing about this, like this will never happen. But, like, I mean, realistically, why not? Like, why can't the commission do this? They are a government body that regulates a monopoly. Why can't they ask the CEO to come in and talk to them?
I mean, they can ask. I just don't know if, you know, for them to have the authority to take him into custody and compel him to be in that building. Imagine the litigation that arises from that. You know, I don't know how long they want to beat that drum. If they start to get the answers they're looking for, it gets to the point where you're asking, what's the point?
All right, let me ask a cynical question, which I know will shock you both because we're talking politics here. Is there a chance that, and I'm not going to name names because I'm not sure who this might apply to, but is there a chance that any of the commissioners who are saying publicly they want Brandt there might not actually want him to come so they can keep using it as a talking point?
Of course. Sure. There's always that chance.
There's never hypocrisy in politics, ever. So I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, that never happens at all.
A cynical answer to a cynical question.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so this might be a slightly awkward segue from going from hypocrisy to talking about the CorpComp's new code of ethics, but there was some discussion that this maybe doesn't actually do everything that it says it's supposed to do. You have the issue of so-called dark money and independent expenditure groups. Chad, how big of an impact do you think that this new code of ethics that the CorpComp adopted is going to make?
I mean, it's a step forward, and it's ironic. I mean, this is first brought up in 2016 there were debates about a code of ethics at the CorpComp. There's been this ongoing conversation. It's a step forward. I think there's two loopholes, though, here. You know, there's the exemption for clean elections candidates, and so it doesn't preclude anybody who works for a utility from giving that qualifying contribution.
The $5.
The $5 contribution for qualifying for public funding. And quite frankly, almost everybody runs as a clean elections candidate for a corporation commission because it's the only way you can raise money for that race for the most part. So that's a big loophole. And I'm not sure, though, legally speaking, if you could actually prevent an individual from giving money. I think that's probably a First Amendment issue right there. So I don't think you can do that anyways. And then the bigger issue is anything they do doesn't really matter in a lot of things because independent expenditures are where most money comes in from campaigns now. And they can't do much at the Corporation Commission level. That's a bigger issue. It's an ongoing debate. We may have a ballot measure next year talking about the subject matter. So it's a step forward. I think it's a good step forward. Will it solve some of the concerns people have had over the past several years? Maybe a couple, but it doesn't address the whole thing by any means.
What do you think, Emily?
From a public relations standpoint, it was absolute necessity. You know, a code of ethics is never going to be good enough to satisfy everyone. It's hard to write it in such a way to capture every circumstance under the sun. It's a great step in the right direction, but, you know, your code of ethics is only as good as the people that are choosing to adhere to it or not. And that's where it really lies. And I think you've got commissioners there now that want to do the right thing and want to fix the cloud that's been hanging over the ACC. And I think that this is their public statement, their proclamation on that topic. But I think you're going to see them put their money where their mouth is and the actions back that up.
All right, another pretty big story from this week. The director of the Department of Child Safety, Greg McKay, announced that he is stepping down to go work for a nonprofit in that same field. Emily, how significant was he in that role, and what is the impact of his departure, do you think?
You know, talk about a hard job. He was very significant in that role. You know, he stepped in. He was a part of the whistleblower group that he sort of unveiled to the world the backlog of 17,000 cases and the horror in that. And he was instrumental in catching that up and getting that under control. You know, no director is without some controversy, but he did very well with a job that not many people wanted. And, you know, I'm glad for him that he's able to move on to something else. I think he's leaving that department in a better position for the next person to come in. They can certainly take it to the next level, but there's not the egregious neglect and cleanup to do at this point. So he's leaving it better than he found it.
Yeah, and I agree with that. You know, I think that many people, when the governor kind of tapped Greg McKay to run the agency, were a little concerned because it was kind of a quick change from Flanagan, who'd been recently appointed under Brewer.
The agency wasn't all that old either.
No, the agency was pretty new. You know, it was a creation of Brewer. But, you know, I actually think the governor did a good job in appointing Greg McKay to run that agency. I think he gave the director the tools he needed to kind of fix that agency. I mean, quite frankly, you know, I think the governor's had a lot of issues with a lot of agencies. I think DCS has been one of the better examples for this governor and this administration. The big question now is actually Tim Lee's point about this not being a fun job. Who actually wants this job is the question. Who's going to line up to get this job? Who's going to get replaced? Or who's going to replace McKay? Because even though this agency's heading in the right direction, if you don't have the right person running that, it can go south pretty quickly because you're such a complicated issue. So I think that's the big question now is who is Governor Ducey going to actually find to replace Greg McKay?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to ask both of you, if you've heard anything on that ground, because this is an unpopular, very difficult job. And it's coming at a time when the entire child welfare system is changing its approach due to this federal law change. They're going to be looking much more at keeping families together, et cetera. Any word on the street?
No, and Andy Tobin's already been appointed. I think he's
just
off
got a new
list.
Job. So yeah. Too bad.
He usually comes in and saves the day. I don't know who's going to be appointed. Chad, have you heard?
I have not heard anything about it. But Emily wins the day with the Tobin comment, so I just give her that. None.
Although Tobin has in the past been appointed to head an agency and then shut it down.
Yeah.
So he might
come in and close it.
That could potentially be an option for him. But I think both of you raised the point that this is it's a hard job, and it's in some ways maybe a thankless job, because if you do it well, you're doing your job. If you don't do it well, there are kids who are suffering, and absolutely nobody wants to see that. I guess how does the state and the governor, I guess, how do they try to lure somebody in to do that? Like, what's the approach to say, hey, please come do this job that probably not a lot of people want to do?
I think there's an extra $1 million from the Commerce Authority we can use now. So that would be maybe a good incentive. I don't know.
I think you're going to find someone that has a calling in this area because, as you pointed out, Mark, the stakes are really high. It's probably one of our most important agencies. So it's going to be a very credible, qualified person that's tapped to do this.
This is also a cynical question, but is this a political job that pays off in any political way? Have we seen that happen?
No.
I mean,
I think it's all risk.
Yeah, I mean, it's like being, I mean, to your point earlier, it's like, you know, it's kind of like, it's like being director of Homeland Security. Like, as long as you're doing your job, nobody's paying attention because everything's good. Once things go south, you get blamed for everything.
It's your fault.
Yeah, it's your fault. It's a tough job, and there's high political risk when you take a job like this if you're looking for it as being a stepping stone, let's put it that way.
All right, so I think probably the last topic that we'll have time for today is the announcement this week that Phoenix has secured $100 million from the federal government for the South Central Light Rail extension, assuming that Phoenix voters are okay with continuing that project. The money would not come in. The city would be reimbursed for it. It's not like the city gets $1 million check and then spends that on the project. We talked to Scott Smith. He poo-pooed the idea that there was anything suspicious in the timing of this, given that early ballots are going out in a couple weeks. Is this just the way the federal government works? Do you think there's anything timed to this announcement?
No, I mean, I can't imagine a situation where the Trump administration is helping out Mayor Gallego on this issue. So I highly doubt there's any political conspiracy here. But I mean, I think it does underscore, though, what this is about and the investment this is, it can potentially be in the city. And if the voters, you know, overturn the light rail decision they made just a few years ago and we lose all this money, it's going to have a huge, huge, huge negative impact on the city for many years to come. It underscores the importance of why we need to keep investing in all of our transportation options here in Phoenix.
Well, you know, there was another important fact that came out with the announcement of the money from the federal government, and it's something that hasn't been announced. But the cost of that South Rail extension, that strip down Central into South Phoenix, has now, it originally, when the voters voted on it in 2015, was estimated at about $550 million. It then went up to $770 million. The newest documents with this influx of federal money take it to $1.3 billion for that 5.5-mile route. That's $250 million a mile. They are forecasting in that same document from Valley Metro in the city of Phoenix an average ridership of 9,600. If you do the math on that, that's $140,000 per rider. You could buy everyone a Tesla for that money. And it would be cheaper.
Maybe there's an extra million from the Commerce Authority to help fill the gap on that.
And what I would say is these predictions almost never bear out the way they are originally projected.
It'll be more expensive by the time they build it.
I'm talking about ridership. They predicted ridership to be so low when this light rail opened up. It's surpassed every expectation. And the proof is right there for all of us to see. If you look at downtown Phoenix, you look at Tempe, you look at Mesa, the resurgence in some of these central city areas, the investment along these light rail lines, more than offset the cost of the light rail itself.
Phoenix. And in Phoenix, ridership drops every year. And this is a Phoenix-only election. You know, with all due respect to Tempe and Mesa, that's a different circumstance.
I disagree with you.
Well, unfortunately, we'll have to leave that note of disagreement. Will have to be the last one. Thanks to Emily Ryan with Copper State Consulting, former House Minority Leader Chad Campbell, now with Strategies 360. Guys, thanks to you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.